Tonight, we're lucky to have two amazing authors and thinkers with us in studio to talk about their research and methods around postural health. We have Esther Gokhale, who is a licensed acupuncturist and the founder of the Gokhale Method, an approach to postural health and re-education that she teaches at her Palo Alto Wellness Center and beyond. She's studied biochemistry, anatomy, physiology, and anthropology at Princeton and Stanford, and is the author of the Nautilus Book Award-winning 8 Steps to a Pain-Free Back. Esther, thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure.
We also have in studio tonight with us Galen Kranz, who's professor of architecture at UC Berkeley, with a special focus on the sociology of architecture and the social and cultural factors that influence design. She's also a certified teacher of the Alexander Technique, which has been called the grandfather of somatic disciplines, and she's the author of a fascinating and provocative book called The Chair, Rethinking Culture, Body, and Design. Galen, thank you for joining us.
It's a pleasure indeed.
So, Galen, I'd like to start with you. You posit in your book, The Chair, that chairs are actually detrimental to our health. This is a provocative claim, to say the least. Now, obviously, the best way to understand your argument fully is to read your whole book. But I wonder if you could tell us just briefly how you came to your conclusions.
Well, there was an aha moment. I had been studying the issue of chair design from an architectural point of view, ergonomic point of view, and so forth. And then one summer, I visited a friend who had been working in Africa, and I saw a set of photographs of people whose posture had the same kind of variety that we did. That is, some were slumped and collapsed, and some looked better and worse than others. Uh-huh. And I was also studying the Alexander Technique at that time. So I was using my Alexander eyes, you might say, to look at these photos. And then there was one photo that stood out that was really where the person was really very well developed. The spine was erect and the neck wasn't jutted forward. The head was poised properly at the top of the spine, and the shoulders were wide and draped evenly and with no stress over the shoulders, and he had a very deep rib cage. And I was carrying on about how good he looked, and there was one other like him, and I said, oh, there's another one. And my friend said, oh, that's funny, the two you picked are two that grew up in a village that didn't have a missionary school, so they never sat in tables and chairs.
Uh-huh.
That's when I knew that the reason the ergonomic literature was fairly conflicted was because, and I was confused about its conflicts. Why was it so internally inconsistent?
Well, among ergonomists.
The ergonomicists, yes, or however.
Ergonomics people.
Yeah, professionals, let's say. So anyway, I was very confused at reading their literature and having this flash of insight through these photographs. It was very important. It sent me back to the university to look at medical rehab literature as well as ergonomic literature and start to see, to collect information about chairs themselves. It's not a question of good chair design or bad chair design. It's something's wrong with the chair itself, and I decided I would find out what it was. And indeed, the essence of it is the right angle seated posture.
Mm.
It's very hard on the lumbar back.
Right. Esther, you've done a lot of research in other cultures. Galen was just talking about looking at photographs from Africa and how that inspired her. Can you tell us about your research into other cultures and their posture?
So people in non-industrial cultures, and I've visited Burkina Faso and Brazil and Ecuador and Thailand and India, and so they know how to use their bodies really well. This is something we've forgotten to do. And so there are some characteristics that I can describe that that characterize their posture, the way they bend, the way they sit, stand, lift, and so on. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting is that it's very different from what we do, but it's also very different from what we think we should be doing. And it's also different from what our experts tell us to do.
Those ergonomic systems.
And so I've made it my quest to character to articulate what it is they're doing and then teach people here how to get to those kind of primal postures and primal movements.
Can you give us a few examples of those primal postures or movements? Galen just mentioned that the right angle seated position is actually not healthy. So what other positions do other cultures have that are more healthy or that don't lead to back pain?
Well, if we look into the seated posture, for example, you know, what we tend to do in our culture, most common posture is we sit in a kind of C shape and we slump and we're relaxed and slumped. But then if we think about good posture, then maybe we arch our backs, you know, we sit up straight and there's a lot of tension in the low back. And then if we listen to our experts, our ergonomic chairs and so on, are designed to support what's called a natural S-shaped curve in the spine. And I think all of those directions are problematic. They do more harm than good. And if you see people in these cultures, what they do when they're seated, whether they're seated on a chair or a bench, or is they have their tails out behind them, is one way to describe it. They have their behinds out behind them. And then that allows for a stacking of the rest of the spine that is comfortable and actually therapeutic. So I actually think sitting can be really good for you mm-hmm. if it's done well.
Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what your book is all about, Galen. Yeah? So would you agree with that C-shaped spine is what results
is
from
the
sitting
slump
in the chair, yeah?
That's, yeah. And I agree that if you can learn to sit properly in a chair, but it takes a lot of skill and a lot of work. I would rather us just sit much higher with our knees significantly lower than our hips, but that would mean changing not only the height of our chairs, but also the height of our work surfaces.
Right. So a really big shift.
Yeah.
One of the simplest and yet most surprising insights that I gained from reading your book, The Chair, was this idea that how we use and hold our bodies is a really huge issue. It's determined more by cultural factors than by our physiology or our anatomy. Can you talk about this challenge to the common understanding about what posture is and how we should hold our bodies and how culture has influenced our dependence on the chair?
Well, culture gives us all sorts of ideas about how girls should sit. Let's just take gender differences for something easy to look at. Girls are supposed to sit with their legs quite close together, and boys can sit with them really wide apart. So right there, there's a difference, and it gets, when you repeat a gesture like how you sit, you know, where your legs are day in and day out, then the form of the body actually starts to shift too, because the muscles on one side shorten and the other side lengthen, and pretty soon that's your form. That's what you can do. You can change all this. That's the good news, is that if you decide to change and stretch or do yoga or do Pilates or do gyrotonics or gyrokinesis, which is my favorite, you can change everything. But otherwise, culture does shape our form.
Mm-hmm. Esther, your method, Galen just gave us a list of different somatic disciplines. How would you say your method, the Gokhale method, fits in or is different from things like Pilates or physical therapy or yoga?
I think a lot of approaches focus on exercises to help people improve themselves. And the Gokhale method uses everyday activities as your exercise and as your therapy. So, for example, bending, if it's done well, and I'm talking about hip hinging, the way they do it in Village Africa, and for example, then it is your...
Can you explain just a little more what hip hinging is, just for the radio
Absolutely.
Listening audience? We might not...
Sure.
Yeah.
So this is the way all people in Africa bend. They don't bend with their knees. They, unless something is extremely heavy, but they hinge at the hips. But before I teach people to do that, I first, you know, in the course that we teach all over the world, we start with lengthening the spine, and then we improve the shape of the spine. Then we teach people to bolster and brace the spine with a lot of extra muscular strength, and only then do we teach them to hip hinge. But so once you have a good length and shape in your spine, then hinging almost with a slight, you know, with as much bend in your knee as you need because of hamstring inflexibility. So that becomes very healthy. Now your back remains in one straight piece, and it becomes a hamstring stretch, a rhomboid strengthener. You know, you're getting all kinds of exercise just
from
bending,
sitting,
just
from,
hip hinging, or this healthy bending.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I'd like to
please
put a second on that. Yes, absolutely. It's the daily activities that make the difference. And the other system that I've come out of is the Alexander technique,
right,
where it's the everyday activity of sitting and standing and leaning and reaching that is what ultimately shapes your body and your fitness. So, yeah.
I see a lot as a massage therapist in my clients that they have a perspective that they can come in for an hour or maybe even a few sessions of an hour each and be fixed. And then I often say to them, you have 1 hour with me, and the rest of the hours of your week are spent doing something else that's actually sending you in the opposite direction, in the unhealthy direction. So I really agree with you. Do you have any opinions on how to change that attitude?
Well, I think what I find makes my approach very efficient is that we're using hands-on guidance at the same time as we're using visual cues. So the approach is rich in images, and we're also using the intellect. We explain to people why it is we're doing things a certain way. So they see it, they understand it, they feel it, and these kinesthetic, intellectual, and visual inputs are intertwined, and it makes the transformations extremely efficient. Like, our course is only 6 sessions, and people often will report that it's been life-changing. And I think that efficiency, I think, is important. It makes people feel encouraged.
Mm-hmm. I saw that in your book, just the number of photos that accompanied the instructions. You're talking about hip hinges just now, and I didn't understand what that really was. And then I was flipping through your book, and I saw photos of people during maybe rice harvests.
Mm-hmm.
And I understood, and I'd seen that image before, and it all clicked in for me.
Yeah, you know, we have a huge visual cortex, and we have all this gray matter we carry around all day. We might as well put it to good use.
That's right.
Yes. Well, that's why I wrote my book, to try to give rationale for caring about posture and caring about these things, to show that it's not just physical. It's intellectual, and it's cultural ideas that are at stake here. So I really agree that Esther's approach of doing the intellect and the vision and the sensation together is really good, really good.
I recognized in your book, Galen, a kind of, both of you actually, Galen and Esther, a kind of more holistic view on body consciousness and postural consciousness. Galen, for example, you wrote in your book about the need to honor both sensation and reason, mm-hmm. and the wisdom of the body as well as the intellect. And Esther, I heard you in a talk that I saw on YouTube speak about a hygiene, or more of a systematic view of health rather than an Asclepion, am I pronouncing that right? More mm-hmm. of a symptomatic view of healthcare. And this may be a conceptual reach on my part, but I kind of see both of your viewpoints as a more female or even feminist way of looking at healthcare problems, or even a more systems theory view. Mm-hmm. Do you have any thoughts on that? Let me start with you, Galen.
Well, that question threw me for a loop, I have to say. The systems part, I definitely see. Now, then I have to ask myself, are women more susceptible or open to systems thinking? I don't know. I wouldn't dare to say that. But I'd be interested in your view on this, Esther.
I do see my approach as being having a strong feminine principle, but not by any means being exclusive to females.
Mm-hmm.
But what I like about it is that it provides something that a typical mother provides, which is empowerment, education. You're facilitating someone's, you're giving someone the tools to help themselves rather than, say, obliging them to come see you three times a week for the rest of their lives. Right. You know, you're really teaching people how to take care of themselves, how to stand well on their own feet, and how to thrive. And so that has traditionally been a feminine role, but is certainly, you know, provided for by men as well.
But yeah, men teach boys how to fish and how to think about life. And I find it hard to say that the system and the total view is particularly female.
Perhaps I'm reacting more to a sense that I have of the Western medical establishment being very male-dominated, and this idea of sort of attacking the issues that we have in our body rather than really looking at the root causes and the systematic causes.
I mean, the Greeks had that kind of bifurcation, you know. Asclepius was the god of medicine, and, you know, it was about, yeah, fighting bacteria, fighting outside forces, and hygienes were about figuring out what it is, what rule of nature we're not, you know, respecting, perhaps.
Esther, you told me earlier that you're actually designing a chair yourself, and this is in addition to your book and your courses and a TV special. Can you talk about the importance of multimedia platforms or multiple media platforms for bringing this kind of information to the public?
Yeah, I totally agree with Galen that posture is a cultural matter. And so I've made it my work to approach people in many different ways. You know, so some people learn visually, so the DVD is helpful to them. And of course, you need the material world to be conducive to healthy posture. And see, I actually think sitting can be very comfortable and also very good for you. So my chair is going to be a therapeutic thing. It's going to help people stretch sit. It's going to help people stack sit, which are things I teach. And that allows things like, you know, when you breathe, if you're stack sitting, then your whole body gets a kind of massage. It's lengthening and resetting and lengthening and resetting. And that helps the body circulation and rehydrating the discs and so on. So that's what I have in mind in my chair design.
Excellent.
Very excited.
Galen, your book is about, or at the end of your book, you explain your theory of body conscious design. Mm. Can you explain what that means and why it's important?
Well, maybe this is I would love to speak about it, but maybe this is the point for me to say that there is a chair that I designed that people can go sit on because it's in a public setting. It's over at Fort Mason right now at a show that opened a week ago on June 24th and is going to be up until next June 24th. There's 35 artists who've installed chairs in the public domain outdoors. They're never locked up, so you can try them all anytime, day or night. And my chair, is everyone says, is the most comfortable chair in the show. Are we surprised? It's a lounge chair. I really like what happens when there's an oblique angle between the thigh and the trunk rather than a right angle between the thigh and trunk. And the oblique, is like what I call a perch position. And if you rotate that in space, you get a lounge chair. So I've got this redwood lounge chair out there.
And can you talk a bit about why your process of designing that might be different from another person's process of designing a chair?
Yeah, and yes, getting back to your point about body conscious design or your question, that chair is inspired by one done in 1925 by Corbusier and Charlotte Perriand.
A very famous chair.
It's a famous chair, and it has springs, leather straps and springs. And so I asked myself, could I make an equally comfortable chair in a rigid material like wood? And so what I did was have somebody trace what happens to that leather when somebody's sitting in it. So I trace the deformations, you might say, and I use what the body does to make then a new profile in a hard material, and it's surprisingly comfortable given how rigid it is.
Uh-huh.
So that's an example of taking the body as the starting point. And students like it because they become the authority. Their experience, their sensory experience.
Your students at UC Berkeley.
Yeah, my students like it because they become the authority. Instead of having to look something up in a book or reading what somebody told them they should think, if you teach sensory awareness, then people can look into their own experience. And right now, we're all so shut off from our own experience. We try not to feel our bodies because they hurt.
Right.
Yeah. So taking on the point of view of the body. But I like to use the word conscious because there is mentation here. There is thinking. So thinking and feeling go together in body conscious design. So if the rest of the, if more designers, you know, really were on speaking terms with our body, I think we'd have a nicer world
to
live in.
We'd all be more comfortable.
Yeah, we would all benefit.
Galen Kranz and Esther Gokhale, sitting here in a chair and trying to sit up straighter while I'm with you. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for letting us talk to your audience. That's a privilege. Thank you.
Thank you.
So Galen Kranz's book, The Chair, Rethinking Culture, Body, and Design, can be found at your local library, at bookstores, and online. For more information on Esther Gokhale and the Gokhale Method, go to egwellness.com. That's EGWELLNESS.com. Galen Kranz and Esther Gokhale, thank you again.